The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Hazel Chew is with me, though, in the meantime, Green Party councillor and former Lord Mayor of Dublin, to talk not about politics, Hazel. It's good to see you. Thanks a million for coming in to us.
Thanks for having me.
So I know you're writing, and people might have seen your piece in the paper today, about your recent breast cancer diagnosis. So maybe just bring us right back to when that started. I mean, when you first noticed some of the symptoms yourself.
Well, it started in May. Well, firstly, I want to say thank you to a lot of people who messaged us, who were very concerned and offering a lot of very supportive messages to me and my family. It's been quite a day, to be honest with you, Kieran, so, and yourselves as well, the crew here. What happened was in May, I found a lump and I asked my GP for a referral. And they had thought, well, listen, it should be fine, but because there's a history of breast cancer in your family, we'll refer you. So I ended up going in for a triple assessment in St. Vincent's. And from there, they had a biopsy, and the biopsy showed that I had cancer on my right side. And from then, I had to have an MRI, which showed I had cancer on my left side. So I then ended up having an MRI biopsy, two of them. And I do not wish the MRI biopsy on my worst enemy. It is the worst thing in the world. But I had that and another ultrasound biopsy. And they found that it was two sites on my right, one on the left. Still very early stages. So, like, I am one in seven that of women that get breast cancer in Ireland. It is a high rate. So, and what we have noticed is that the earlier the detection, the better. So, as much as I am here today to talk about my own story, it's to also make sure that we talk about the issues, especially in light of this month, October, being Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
So, you talk of the piece as well about, and you've just touched on it there, that you had this family history of it. Yet at no point until the diagnosis do you seem to have taken it seriously, the possibility that you had breast cancer. Is that fair?
It is fair. And people,
was that an element of denial, do you think?
No, but it's an element of how we all are. You find something and you go, listen, it'll be grand, sure. Like, I'll go get a check, or maybe I'll wait for that. I think it's symptomatic of how a lot of us think, well, if there's, it's not until something is really wrong we kind of go, we'll get it sorted properly. You always, things like work, like childcare, like everything gets in the way. So even before I went into my GP, it was 2 weeks. And then there was a blockage in the system in terms of getting a referral for assessment. It was, I think, about 6 weeks before I got an assessment. And that was with me with a history. And I had got a check already in 2024 because I have a history of breast cancer in the family. I have had a check beforehand. But this is where I said to the minister's office today was that we need to lower the age of screening at the moment. Mm-hmm. Right now, there is a policy in place that it is 50 to 69. We need to lower that to 45 or even lower to 40. And on the other end, we need to have it up to 74. That's what Sweden has. Sweden has it starting at 40. And that's what the Irish Cancer Society is asking. But on that, the minister has to fund the personnel, because I was really lucky. I had a very good team through surgery and now for treatment on the other end. And my clinical nurse, like, she does so much. And I don't want it to be the case of, hey, you know what? We're going to do this. We're going to add more work on you.
Yeah.
You need to fund it, and you need to fund it properly.
The diagnosis when it came down, I want to talk about those, the biopsies and everything that happened, because I think it's maybe during them is when all of this maybe kind of struck you. But in the piece today, I'll read the line you wrote. That following Monday, we were told it was indeed cancer, but it was in the very early stages. And then you go on to talk about what the advice was. But what was that message like to receive?
It was, so when I got the first call, I had just been at a funeral of my friend's mum who died of breast cancer. So that was when I got the call to say, listen, you need to come back in and bring someone. So I already knew there was something not right. And I had the weekend to think about that. So to then go in to be told,
okay, it's early stages. Oddly, it was a relief because it wasn't a, hey, you're stage four here and I'm sorry, your survival rate is bad. So it's early stages. We can, your prognosis is very good, but it's going to be long.
So, I mean, was it good news then because you spent the weekend catastrophizing?
Yeah, I spent the weekend catastrophizing, but also with cancer, any cancer or any illness, people will tell you, the fact that you just don't know. It's the unknowns. Yeah. Even now when I do know what it is, because I just had surgery last week, I don't know what the next step will be until I meet my consultant who will tell me the histology of my tumor to know whether it should be chemo or radio. Like right now they're talking about it should be radiotherapy, but it could be chemo if it changed or if it spread to my lymph node. And the people I've spoke to so many people when I was in Vincent's, is that is the awfulness of cancer, is that you don't know. They could tell you one thing, and because you go for your checks, your screens, your other things, and they remove things and test them, then it changes to something else. And that unknown is very hard to deal with.
Are you comfortable with your own mortality?
I don't think anyone is comfortable.
Absolutely not.
No one is comfortable with my
mortality. Some people say they are, though.
But they say they are. Do they really? Are they really? Yeah, that's a question.
I don't believe
them. Are you really comfortable? I guess what I was comfortable with was being able to very honestly tell my 7-year-old that I'm not going to die. And at least I hope definitely this time I won't be. So it's the other worry about cancer is future. It's reoccurring. So you want to make sure that what you're telling your child that you aren't going to die happens next time as well. So
yeah. So how quickly did your thoughts turn to the kids? You know, you mentioned, Vicky Phelan, and I remember as well, you know, Lindsay Bennett, who I would have spoken to the day her settlement was made public as well. And it was all her focus was her kids, you know, through it all. And that's human nature as well, I think, that when we're faced with the prospect of our own mortality, we think about our kids and how they're going to process it and deal with it. So tell me about the conversations maybe your 7-year husband had about telling your 7-year-old.
It's funny, the conversations I had with Vicky was during COVID. So it was always during a bleak time anyway, but she was such an amazing lady. But that conversation was telling your kids what will happen. And I didn't think I'd ever have those conversations. But when I had to have it with Patrick, when things slightly changed after the MRI showed that it was more than what we thought, I said, how do we tell Alex this? And his thing was, well, I guess we try to frame it how a 7-year-old can see it. And one of the things we did was, we'll let you name the lump, which is a bit odd. And my mum frowned a bit when I said it to her. So this is why the lump was called Todd, and Todd and his friends had to go. Like, I swear to God, I am.
Did you ask where the name Todd came from?
No.
They're Todd in her class.
And there was someone else in her class, a Tio in her class, which she went, oh, mommy, let's not name it Tio because I like Tio in my class. And this is going to turn her off all people that are named Todd in future.
Sorry. I mean, her dream partner could be Todd, but it's ruined now.
But the thing is, like her, she was able to then see, okay, these are things that are bad that needs to go, and then mama will be fine. So, and that was, I guess, a good thing to be able to convey in such a practical terms. And we're lucky. Her class, the parents have been amazing. Her school has been amazing. So we've been very good on that.
So you mentioned the MRI biopsies.
Yes.
And it was. During this process, I think, and this is the sense I get from the piece you wrote today, where the reality of being a patient kind of struck you, despite all the support networks, you're doing this on your own to a degree. You know what I mean? There's a loneliness to the journey.
Massively lonely. And it's you have all these supports. And one of the things I said at the end of the piece was, if people want to talk about this, and just want to shoot the breeze or talk about their story, email me if you can't get through the various helplines. But it is still lonely. No matter who you are and you can relate, it's still lonely. The moment that loneliness hit me was on the MRI, actually.
So tell me about the MRI.
The MRI was strange. For all your listeners who've had an MRI before, and I've had plenty in my life, you always lie on your back and you kind of stare in this contraption, and it's slightly claustrophobic, this hole that clanks and whirls. And but breast MRI, you're lying on your front.
Okay.
Yes, you're lying on your front with the metal literally 2 inches or so away from your nose. So it is, and your head is propped up by this kind of a contraption where your nose is then very close to the metal. Your whole body is putting weight on your front, and then the clanking and the whirling. So you can feel and see all the clanking and the whirling, or you can hear all the clanking, but you can't see it because you're looking at the front. So it's even more claustrophobic. And then on top of that, what during that biopsy, and I'm sorry to be descriptive in this, but I guess it's things we should talk about. It's nothing to be ashamed of, is that for the biopsy, they literally have two grids, and they squeeze the bejesus out of your breast, and then they pull a needle in. And during this, you're holding...
It's actually sore, is it?
It's so sore. Okay. Even though they put local anesthetic in, it's so sore. And that is the moment where, even though you're surrounded by people, because of the whirling and the imaging happening, that moment you realize, oh, hang on, I'm doing this on my own. So, like, you may have a very good support network, but you're there on your own. And that's when it really felt very lonely. Now, saying that, I still have very good support. So I don't want to diminish the amazing people that have helped me during this.
And how then, did you then, was it at that moment you get a sense of and maybe this is never the way you thought about it in this context, but if there being something in your body you needed to get out, you know, that's sometimes that, you know, people sometimes struggle with that, that their own body has betrayed them, maybe is how they interpret it.
You feel a sense of you've done something wrong, or you've done something like, you know this yourself, being someone on radio, you get a lot of comments about how, you've done something to deserve this. And through the last year, especially in politics, I always feel that. I always feel I'm doing the wrong thing, or I've done something. So to then get this, my first reaction was, oh my God.
Why did you feel like that over the last year in politics?
Elections happened. Elections happened. But for me, it was like, oh God, okay, maybe I did something to do this. And this is where your clinical team is really important, because my clinical nurse, Sharon, who is the most amazing woman in the world, was very quick to dispel that notion of, this is not your fault. This is no one's fault when you get cancer. This is what happens. Now your job is to fight this, and fight this as in the best mental health you can, which is hard, because all you're thinking about is, there's something inside me. Did I get it there? How do I get it out? Please get it out of me. And that sense of kind of urgency also drives a lot of your decisions, which sometimes may not be the best decisions as well. So, because...
Was that the case for you? Did you ignore Sharon when you shouldn't have?
I may have ignored Sharon when I shouldn't have. And I spoke to Sharon today on the phone, where you would be given, when you're opting for a mastectomy, lumpectomy, when you're offering for a breast-conserving lumpectomy, they will try to save as much of your breast as possible, and they will present you with, an assortment of plans of what's the best way. And I was advised, this is one of the options. It will be a longer healing time. Surgery date is a little later, longer healing time, longer surgery. But it will aesthetically in future will be better. And I just went, I don't care how it looks, get it out of me now. So that's why surgery was quicker. I was able to bounce back quicker, but it just meant, I said it in my article, it just means I have wonky boobs now. And like, thank God for my husband who loves me. So, but like, I wish I listened to Sharon. And what I would advise to people who are going through that stage, to take a beat and think, it's very, very hard among everything in your head to take that beat and to actually make that decision. But do take that pause and think about it. And also, at the beginning, when everything is overwhelming and unknown, to also take a pause to go, okay, what course of action will happen now, and what are the next steps?
And you've touched on this already. You know, you provide some of the support lines from, you know, the Irish Cancer Society, 1-800-200-700, our cancer support as well, 01215-0250. And then your own email you offer to people, hazel.hugh@greenparty.ie. But before we go, I think it's worth repeating a point you make in it as well. It's that the options that are available to you weren't available. You talked about a family history. They probably weren't available to people you've been related to in the past who have been diagnosed with breast cancer.
Absolutely.
And cancer isn't, it's not to be kind of sniffed at or ignored,
no.
But it is not the death sentence it once was.
It's not the death sentence, but it has to be caught early. And this is why I've spoken to people who are waiting 6 months on referrals, and also having spoken to Sharon and her team, they're completely under-resourced at the moment, and there needs to be another unit in St. Vincent's for a mammogram unit. So all these things need to be resourced and funded, and that's up to the minister to do it. And I really hope that this government will do that, because they had a national cancer strategy that they are falling short on. And I don't want to just push it on the staff and say, well, that's the staff's responsibility to reach certain KPIs. It's not that.
Yeah.
It's about properly funding and resourcing our health system so that the 1 in 7 women can survive.
Despite going with the monkey boob surgery option, you're still in that unknown territory to a degree now, because you're waiting to find out, you know, what happens in treatment and what the recommendation is. So, you know, to your earlier point about how that's almost the worst part, how are you at the moment?
I could be better. I could be worse. So I'm okay, to be honest. Like, it was really, it was a bit cathartic. It was actually very cathartic to be able to talk about it, because it's been going on for months, and we deliberately did not talk about it for many reasons. But because we had got asked a few times recently, I thought, you know what? I don't want to be looking over my shoulder on it. And on top of the fact that it is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, if raising awareness of this can get even one woman to check their breasts and check to get a referral, please do. If it will make the Minister of Health and the Department of Health put in more funding, I am happy to talk to anyone about it. And the thing is, I got at least about 15 emails today, all from women saying, listen, they are either going to go check, or they're going to actually look at this thing that they found, and they're going to go get it checked out. So I think that's really important.
Hazel, we wish you the best of luck with it all.
Thank you.
And we'll keep in touch. Thanks a million for coming
in
to us. Hazel Chu, a Green Party councillor.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.